You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Second Life. I'm your host, Hillary Kerr, and for those of you just tuning in, Second Life is a podcast spotlighting women who have made major career changes. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, I'm speaking with Candace Nelson, banker turned baker extraordinaire who left a prestigious career in the high-tech finance world to start a cupcake revolution as the co-founder of the Sprinkles Empire. She's also a lovely human and the perfect person for Second Life. So with no further ado, I would like to welcome Candace Nelson. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, this is such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's truly a treat on my end on a number of levels, especially because I am a carb enthusiast. And I feel like there are maybe now more than there used to be, but there aren't that many flag-carrying ladies in Los Angeles who proudly proclaim their love of all things carbs. So
if it's a carb, I'm in. In fact, I've got a business devoted to it. So,
and clearly it's thriving and expanding and doing so well. So we're not the only ones. So I can't wait to get into what made you decide to open the first ever cupcake bakery in the height of the low carb craze back in the early 2000s. But let's start by talking about what you did before you decided to reinvent the cupcake. First things first, what did you study in college?
Well, I went to a small liberal arts college in New England, and I was always had been sort of one of those well-rounded students. And, you know, I was envious of my pre-law, my pre-med friends who'd always known since they were very little exactly what they wanted to do. I had no idea what I wanted to do. The one thing I did know is that I was going to have to support myself. I decided as a result to become an economics major because I felt like the options would be broader for me coming out of college. And, you know, it was a good decision because a lot of people coming out of the econ major were recruited into investment banks. And one of those people was me. I was recruited to work at Alex. Brown in San Francisco as a financial analyst in the corporate finance department, in the technology department. That's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. But basically, it was sort of the beginning of the first tech and dot-com boom in San Francisco. And it was kind of a great place to be at the time. But my job, you know, on a daily basis was, I was essentially a numbers cruncher, and a numbers cruncher that worked, you know, somewhere between 12 and 18 hours a day. It was pretty grueling. I mean, all of those programs are known for being grueling, and this one was, you know, definitely the same.
Did you like your job?
You know, I think I wanted to prove something to myself and to my parents and to everyone that I could do this job, mm-hmm. because it was considered the hardest job and it was like a man's job traditionally. And I wanted to just prove that I could kind of do anything. I wouldn't say I liked it. In fact, I'd say I didn't like it. I was definitely one of the only women. And I didn't feel, you know, strange about that necessarily. But, you know, there were more of us at that level than there were if you looked up the ranks to, you know, managing directors and those sort of upper layers of management. There were very few.
So what kinds of things did you learn in that job? Like, were you looking at companies and figuring out what made a great idea for a business versus what makes a great idea versus the execution? Like, what kinds of things were you sort of figuring out and learning as you were going along?
I think I learned a lot about leadership and also valuation of companies. So, But, you know, I was in this very entrepreneurial world, this world of Silicon Valley, and certainly, you know, hearing of and knowing people who were starting new businesses every day.
You're working in this high pressure, crazy, new, exciting world. And then the dot-com bubble burst.
Well, let me just hold you off for one second. Yes. So it was a 2-year analyst program.
Got it.
And at the end of that, you'd had the option of potentially a 3rd year if you wanted to stay on, which of course I did not. Or you could move on. And that was, you know, there was, you were just saying goodbye. It was all what was expected. It was a 2-year program. And so the dot-com bust had not happened just yet. And companies were still opening, you know, daily. And it was sort of this new age gold rush to San Francisco. All these people were leaving their jobs in more traditional industries to go, you know, make their fortunes overnight at these internet companies. And I was one of them. So I jumped ship to go work at a dot-com, an internet company called snap.com, which was like a portal, like a Yahoo, basically.
Got it.
And that was really fun. I mean, those days were very heady, you know, it was,
what were you doing there?
I was doing business development and working with our, you know, our advertising partners and doing sort of strategic relationships. And, there were so many companies in such need of young talent that they were all trying to outdo themselves with, like, you know, ping pong Friday and, you know, casual Monday through Friday. In fact, you can wear flip flops. I mean, it was, we do corporate bonding on hot air balloons in Napa. It was just like the perks were crazy. And there definitely was a sense of, how can this be real? You know, what, how can this company that doesn't even make any money be throwing all these perks at us? And of course, what we've learned was, wasn't really real.
Not a thing.
And so then, you know, I was at Snap for a couple of years and really the balloon popped, you know, the air just went out of the internet world. And overnight, seemingly overnight, people were leaving in droves. In fact, there was like a 6-week wait for a U-Haul leaving San Francisco because everyone was moving out so quickly. Wow. Because they lost their job, but then there wasn't anything even, there were no prospects, you know, people couldn't even get an interview. The companies weren't left. So a lot of people in my position ended up going to business school. That was kind of the natural next step for someone in my shoes. But I didn't really want to take the natural next step.
Why not?
Well, I wanted to find something that would really fulfill me. You know, it was, became so clear to me that we spend so many hours of our day working. Why would I do something that I didn't love doing?
And how did you figure out what that other path was?
Well, you know, I had always loved to bake. Baking was a hobby of mine. It came from my family. You know, my mother was a great cook. She was always known for her amazing desserts at her fabulous dinner parties. But her grandmother was a food entrepreneur back in the Depression years. She was a restaurateur and really, you know, ahead of her time. I just was raised in this family that appreciated food. And I do think, you know, on some level, it's in my genes.
And female entrepreneurs.
Exactly. Exactly. So I love to bake, and San Francisco is such an inspiring food city. I mean, it still is. I'm not talking about it in the past, but at the time I was being, you know, coming out of college, there's not much food exposure in college. And I was being exposed to the greatest restaurants. One of the perks of my job at Investment Banking, we went to the very best restaurants all the time for closing dinners and, you know, with clients. So I really developed this appreciation for food. And, you know, there happened to be a really sweet and well-respected pastry school right down the street from me in Nob Hill, this place called Tante Marie's. And I just started thinking, maybe what if I, you know, I'd taken some classes there. What if I really tested my interest in baking? You know, I knew I loved to do it as a hobby, but it's very different when you have to get up every day and do something. Would I still love it as much as I did when I was, you know, playing around on the weekends? So going to Tante Marie's for me was sort of like the litmus test. Am I going to really love doing this if it's a job? Is it going to take the joy out of it? And so I enrolled in the 6-month pastry program and realized that I was so excited to go every day. I loved it. And I loved, you know, making something concrete, like working with my hands with sugar and butter and beautiful chocolates and vanillas and creating something that I could give to someone, watch them consume and enjoy it. It was just, it was such a simple pleasure. And it was like, it just felt so good to me.
Do you remember the first thing that you made that you also thought, not only do I enjoy this, but I'm good at this?
I've always been a cake baker. Cakes, you know, from day one, my pastry chef instructor would comment on my cakes.
Okay, so you do this program, you love it, you realize you have a knack. What happens next?
Well, at the end of the program, of course, everyone, all the other very smart, intelligent students go off and get an internship at a bakery. But I decide I can't wait to get started. So I start baking. I create
this. This is so type A of you, on a side note.
I don't have anything to learn. I've learned it all. I've been to pastry school for 6 months. So I started making special occasion cakes, because one of the things that I really enjoyed was sort of the artful creation of these desserts. And I thought, well, what's more artful than a special occasion cake? I can work with fondant, I can work with buttercream, I can create beautiful, multi-tiered, elaborate creations. But think about how often you order cakes that are multi-tiered and elaborate. And that's what sort of led me to the cupcake, my miniaturized version of cake. It was still cake. It was still in my comfort zone.
Keeping the cake and cupcake. And it's true, because it's like, up until that point, though, the cupcake had been rather humble.
Yes, it really came from humble beginnings. I mean, it's something that we all love. It's something that as Americans, we all grow up with. And we have very...
It's very bake sale.
Very bake sale. It's lunchbox. It's nostalgic. And at the time, it was just that. It was like kids' lunchbox fare. It was, you know, grandma's kitchen. It was, you know, you'd find them in the local grocery store in a clamshell. So I thought, what if I repackage the lowly cupcake? What if I make it all grown up, make it sophisticated and artful so that it would appeal to grown-ups as well as kids? And then all of a sudden, your market is vast. Mm-hmm.
What comes first?
So at this point, we haven't touched really on my personal life, but just to catch you up, I now am married at
Got
this
it.
Point. My husband is doing some consulting in the Bay Area, and he and I start thinking, what if you did elevate this cupcake, which I started doing? We think it could really stand on its own. What if we were to open a bakery devoted solely to cupcakes?
Is a revolutionary idea.
No one had done it before. So, you know, I started working on those cupcake recipes, and cupcakes were kind of flying out of my kitchen.
How were you working on them? Were you looking at different cookbooks? Were you experimenting yourself? Were you using like scales and measurements and like writing things down, like you're Einstein creating some sort of crazy formula? Like, what is
right.
that? I'm always development yes. of recipes I find fascinating.
Yes.
So without sharing the secret sauce
of
how
course.
You figure it out.
Well, as a baker who'd been baking for a while, I already had my sort of go-to standby recipes, but I wanted my recipes to be truly exceptional and sort of creative.
And yours.
And my own. Yes. And you know, my husband and I would sit around the dining room table and, as if we were tasting fine wines, blind taste test these cupcakes until we got, you know, whatever flavor I was working on at the time just right. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of the cupcakes only bakery was really gathering steam for us. But we looked around San Francisco and we realized the economy was still in the gutter. I mean, there really was not the right time to be bringing a revolutionary bakery idea to market. And a lot of our friends had moved down to LA to find work. And we came down here for a weekend to check it out. And I remember going to a couple parties and totally different groups of people. They each had the exact same cake. It was this berry and whipped cream cake. And I thought, this is very bizarre. I'm in two totally different parts of town with two very different groups of people, but there's just one cake in LA? What? Okay, I smell opportunity. So we did end up moving down to LA, and I kept baking cupcakes out of my kitchen while we started looking for a location. And let me tell you, my idea very quickly, you know, I had friends supporting me and then friends of friends calling me. And then soon enough, you know, I had no idea who the person on the other end of the line was or how they'd gotten my number.
Wait, so you have straight up strangers calling your home ordering cupcakes?
I was at so-and-so's baby shower. Your cupcakes were so delicious. How do I order them for my next party? And I had people picking up orders like
From your house.
From my West Hollywood condo. Oh my God, I'm sure the neighbors were like, what sort of business is going on over there? People stopping every day, all times of morning and night. But it really, you know, for me, verified my idea. You know, we had so many naysayers who said it's never going to work. First of all, it's LA. No one eats carbs anyway. And, you know, landlords were a part of that group. They weren't, they didn't take us seriously. We had one hang up on us. So it really took us a very long time to find a location. But we were busy the entire time. And I have to say, in hindsight, although it was such a blessing, we were able to think through every last detail. You know, coming from the tech world, Charles and I were really approaching this bakery thing from a different perspective. You know, we thought, listen, if we do start this Sprinkles and it does take off, how are we going to protect it? How do we differentiate ourselves beyond everything we've thought of so far? And so we decided that we needed to trademark, well, first our name, and then also the decoration that we had decided would be the Sprinkles decoration. It's called the Modern Dot. It's two concentric circles in, you know, contrasting colors. And it was just a fun, playful play on the traditional sprinkle. From, you know, intellectual property is something that's huge in the tech world, and it never had been in the bakery world, but that's something we brought with us that really, I mean, there was so much we couldn't protect, don't get me wrong. But it really has been a saving grace to have those few things that we could.
I like the Modern Dot because it is modern, and I think it takes some of like the retro kitsch that can accompany cupcakes and puts it aside and makes it much more of the moment.
No, that's a really good point. The whole kitsch factor. I mean, we had to, from day one, we had to stick to our guns. This is going to be a sophisticated, elegant cupcake.
Okay, so you open, you finally find your space, you've perfected your recipes, you've proven the concept over and over again, you find the landlord who won't hang up on you,
right.
You have the architect, you have the IP, you have it all together, you open for business, you have a built-in audience to a degree, but also it's 2005, so there's no Instagram.
Right.
There's no Snapchat. Twitter is like kind of a thing, but not a super duper thing. Were you worried about getting the word out?
I think people were genuinely, people who walked by in Beverly Hills, genuinely curious about what we were, because we didn't look like a traditional bakery. I mean, people, even when they knew where they were going, they would drive by us because we were so under the radar. Our facade barely had a sign on it. It was like this chocolate brown facade with this tiny little neon up at the top. It was very sort of anti-splashy and anti-marketing. But the one thing I did know is I did, yes, have this built-in sort of
following
this base of customers. There was a little bit of buzz building. And the other thing I knew was that Daily Candy was coming out that day. So back in 2005, Daily Candy was the Bible.
That was what we based our business on.
Okay.
Our business model was newsletter.
I don't need to tell you.
Did they come to you?
They came to us. And in fact, we wanted a few more days to get our act together before. And they were like, nope, it's going out. And so they drove our opening day. And we weren't.
They had that power.
We either go out or you lose it. We're like, no, we'll get it together. So it was a lot of sleepless nights just trying to get it all together to prep for our big Daily Candy debut. And I baked, you know, as many cupcakes as I thought I was going to need for the entire day. Because we just wanted to be completely prepared. And we opened the doors.
Wait, how many cupcakes was that?
Like 200 cupcakes. Oh. So, you know, I baked my heart out. I thought we were good. It was Charles running the front. It was me in the back, although I'd pop my head out every now and again. And, you know, there were a few people there right when we opened. And then sure enough, right after Daily Candy went out, I mean, we were swamped. And we had thought people were going to come in and buy a flavor or two, a cupcake or two, and be on their way. But they were buying a dozen or two. So sure enough, it was about 3 hours in and we were completely out of cupcakes. And we had, I mean, you know how people are in LA. There were like agents who had sent their assistants down and said, don't come back without three dozen cupcakes. So we were dealing with a lot, you know, our dream had all of a sudden become sort of a nightmare. We didn't, you know, people were there. We had no product for them. I couldn't believe that's what I was dealing with.
So how many people were working with you at this moment?
Not very many. I look back at the pictures. It was such a motley crew. I mean, we had literally hired people like 2 days before. We'd given them some training on the POS system. I had asked my housekeeper if she knew anyone who wanted to work in a bakery. So a bunch of her friends showed up. They were like in leather jackets, frosting in the back.
So what do you do after that first day, though? Like, do you hire more?
Hiring was sort of a constant thing from day one. But it was also hard for us because, you know, Charles and I are both control freaks, and we wanted every detail to be perfect. And I wanted to make sure every cupcake was frosted just so and placed in the box just so. And we didn't have all of our, you know, procedures and instructions and manuals yet. We had none of that stuff. So it was fly by the seat of our pants. And we really didn't, we wanted to sort of stem the madness a little bit. And so by having less people, we thought we were doing that. Ultimately, on the weekends when it was just crazy, we would, you know, ask some of our friends who were like actors or writers who just thought it was a hoot because it was such a scene at Sprinkles. They would come in and help us, like, throw on a Sprinkles t-shirt and help us for free just for fun. So it was really fun. I mean, there were nights, though, when we, you know, would ball up an apron and sleep on the floor because it wasn't worth the, like, 10 minutes to drive back to our house to get the 15 minutes of sleep. We'd rather have just an extra few minutes of sleep on the floor.
And to that point, like, there's something about being an entrepreneur and especially like that first business where mm-hmm. I feel like you give so much more than you even knew you could or mm-hmm. that you were capable of or that was possible. But that's not sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable.
So how long did that level of madness last? And how did you build a normal day-to-day business out of that where you don't have to call friends in a pinch?
You know, it was, I think, one hire at a time. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, you start to get the rhythms down of your business. You start to get, you know, we scaled up the recipes. We weren't having to constantly fly back to the kitchen. And every time, you know, someone showed up, make more. We just kind of slowly but surely started to get our feet under us. And we got through our first holiday season and we were just sort of patting ourselves on the back because the lists of gifting that we had had to, you know, deal with. And then, you know, it was over and it was January and we finally kind of got our first breath. And then we looked at the phone and it was ringing and it said Harpo Studios. And
so Oprah called.
Basically, Oprah's producer called and said, we need 350 cupcakes in our studio audience tomorrow in Chicago.
Are they sending a plane? Well, like, how are you supposed
to
get there?
Like, are we talking a private plane? They're like, no, we'll just send a messenger, like a courier, to put them on the plane. Like, no.
I was going to say that your type A-ness would not allow for such a thing.
Cupcakes are going to get smashed. So anyway, we fired up the ovens again. We baked our hearts out. We, you know, Charles and I carried as many cupcakes as we could. Luckily, his brother was visiting, so he hopped on the plane with us, too. We took the red eye to Chicago.
You hand-carried cupcakes to Oprah.
Cupcakes to Oprah so that they would be perfect. I mean, we couldn't.
This is your shot.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, it's funny because we were backstage and we were plating all the cupcakes and she had a bunch of people, you know, come and deliver them to the guests in her studio audience. And she literally, I watched from backstage as she literally, you know, said a love letter to Sprinkles Cupcakes. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, this is the most incredible moment of my life. And so as we were leaving, it was really funny because the producer was very understated and she was like, you just might want to get like a little prepared. You might want to, you know, hire another person or something. And we were laughing.
Up your bandwidth for your website. Do you have a website?
We had a simple website at the time.
Up your bandwidth.
Yeah.
Just saying you're going to crash.
Someone who might like get someone to answer your phones for you. And we did what we thought we needed to prepare. But I mean, that was the height of Oprah. That was the golden ticket. I mean, literally overnight when that show aired, we were getting calls from around the world. So we were one location in Beverly Hills and we were like a worldwide brand name. overnight. It was crazy. So then we had to do it all over again. And this time the line was wrapped around the block. I mean, the traffic was stopped in front because people were like, what is going on in there?
Now you only see that for sneakers on Fairfax. Exactly. It's like a Supreme release, except it was cupcakes.
Exactly.
It's amazing. Okay, so this all happened within the first year.
Yes.
Where do you go from there? How do you handle? So scale is something that we think about and talk about all the time.
Right.
And watching businesses scale, and how do you make it work so that you can replicate the experience, so that you can, you know, continue to thrive, so that you're not distracted by 9 million other things?
Because, right.
Yes, like, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you do 9 million other things.
I have to say, it was so overwhelming. And one of the most important things that I learned early on was the power of no. You know, you spend all this time developing this business and dreaming up what it could be and what you hope it will be. And you hope people will like it, and you hope there'll be opportunities for growth. And then you realize that once something's successful, the opportunities are coming at you like crazy. And it's like, well, I need to franchise this, or you need to partner with me here, or let's take this there, or let me hold, you know, I want to wholesale your cupcakes. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Luckily, Charles and I had written not only a business plan, but also sort of a mission statement, you know, corporate guidelines. And I was able to go return to those guidelines and sort of remind myself of what was the spirit of Sprinkles from the very beginning. And it was to grow ourselves, not to franchise, and grow slowly and keep that quality. And now, what did that mean? That meant that our growth was relatively slow. We went from one day people saying our idea was terrible to, you know, a month in, there was another bakery that looked a lot like ours. And then, oh, a week later, there was another one. Oh, and a few days later, there was another one. The copycat bakeries were popping up literally everywhere. And at first, I was
Did you panic?
I was panicked and
furious.
Outraged. I mean, I was outraged. I could have, like, felt like something had been taken from me, stolen from me. And it was distracting for a while. It was distracting. But ultimately, what I remembered and realized was that you can't focus on things that you can't control. Also, the most important thing is that competition keeps you on your toes, right? And Sprinkles was really built on innovation, was an innovative idea to begin with. And we continued to innovate because we wanted to outpace the competition. And so it ultimately drove us to be our best.
So at what point did you decide, okay, we're going to expand into mixes, we're going to expand into ice cream, we're going to have the Sprinkles Mobile,
right.
We're going to create an ATM full of cupcakes.
Right.
Like, how did you start deciding when it was the right time to roll certain things out?
It was really all about bandwidth. I mean, it's been just breathless ever since we opened, you know, and it was sort of as soon as we could kind of hold our heads above water for a minute, we'd think, oh, what's next? What's the next crazy idea? You know, and Charles and I like to say the minute before something's a brilliant idea, it's a crazy idea. And we like to embrace those crazy ideas. So the cupcake ATM, you know, came about. I was pregnant with my second son and I was having, you know, a hormonal moment where I needed my chocolate and I wanted my dark chocolate cupcake. And I said to Charles, I was like, you know, we own a cupcake shop and I can't even get a cupcake at 11 o'clock at night. And we just started laughing about it. Well, what if you could get a cupcake anytime, day or night? What if there was a machine that just dispensed them? And instead of sort of batting that away as a crazy idea, we thought, oh, it's kind of a fun idea. We should look into that a little bit more. And, you know, of course, the cupcake ATM, I mean, we thought it would be kind of a funny idea. We had no idea how much people would respond to it and how much it would drive business. I mean, the bars close at 4 a.m. in Chicago. Do you know where all those people go?
So what do you have crazy ideas about now?
Well, right now it is a lot about pizza. Mm-hmm. You know, creative entrepreneurial types tend to like to start other things. And, you know, Charles and I had the itch and we happened upon this amazing pizziola at a friend's house. He was making delicious Neapolitan-style pizza out of our friend's pizza oven. We started talking to him, like, what is the deal with this pizza? This is
Why
good.
Is it so much better?
Why is it so good? And his name was Daniele Uditi. And he and I had the loveliest chat because we're sort of soul brethren. You know, he talked about what goes into making the perfect dough and all the nuances of that. And he's a sprinkles fan too. So we talked about like what makes the perfect cupcake and pastry. And we just chatted kind of all night. And I asked him what he wanted to do. And he said he wanted to open a restaurant. And as much as Charles and I have said, food business, never again. We were like, without skipping a beat, well, maybe we should do that with you. And so Pizzana recently opened this past spring, and I'm responsible for the dessert menu, which has been so fun for me because, you know, it's more than just cupcakes mm-hmm. and cookies and ice cream. Now I can do.
You can really flex.
Yes. Flex those dessert muscles that I haven't really had a chance to do since pastry school and, you know, introduce those other desserts to the world. So that's been really fun.
Okay. Last question. What are the entrepreneurial skills or mindset that you think people need to build a successful business?
I think from my perspective, it would be grit and perseverance. There were so many moments where I thought, oh my gosh, maybe this really isn't going to happen. I've devoted so much time to it, but maybe it's just a dream. Maybe I just need to give up. But I wasn't one of those people that was willing to do that. It would have been really easy to give up, actually. And I think if you're not 100% possessed with the idea and willing to just throw, you know, everything you got into it, it's really easy to say, okay, I'll go get a traditional job or whatever it is. Maybe it's not the right time. It's all about persevering through all those tough times, because opening a business or starting something new is innately extremely difficult.
Anything worth having is worth working through mm-hmm. the kinks and all of the things and like getting there. And yeah, you are pushing a boulder up a mountain, but ultimately it's for something. And if you really believe in it, mm-hmm. other people will understand it mm-hmm. eventually. Thank you, Candace.
Thank you, this
was it was such a pleasure having you on.
What fun.
I honestly have to say I lived down the street from the very first store when it opened. I lived on Bedford and Wilshire.
Wow.
So I was
right in the hood.
Right in the hood. So I remember it opening. I got that Daily Candy newsletter. I remember it now that you said that. I was like, oh my God, I remember reading about this because I went. I walked up and you were sold out. And
terrible customer service experience.
No, but it made me want it more. And there was like, I think that was also such a cool thing where it also made me realize like, oh, this is a thing. And it has been such a pleasure as a fan watching your business thrive and continue to expand. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. It's a lot to me. I really appreciate it.
Guys, that was food entrepreneur Candace Nelson. If you're in LA, you can snag some of her amazing pizza at Pizzana. For the rest of you, there's sprinkles and don't forget her cookbooks. For more inspiring interviews with women like Afton, head on over to secondlifepod.com where we have so many more for you to peruse. If you like today's show, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review us. We love seeing you spread the word on social. And now you can tag us in your posts. We are at Second Life Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We always want to know who you're interested in hearing from on the show. So send in your request to hello@secondlifepod.com or you can DM us on Instagram. I'm at Hillary Kerr. The show's at Second Life Pod. Our DMs are always open. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.